Have you ever seen someone living an amazing life and thought to yourself, how'd they get so lucky? If you are not currently living a life that's on your terms, a life by your design, then this podcast series is for you. This is the More Confidence with Luna Guy podcast. And in this special season, I'm going to be interviewing people who are living a life by design, living a life on their terms. And I'm going to find out once and for all if it is just luck or there's something more going on. Let's dive in. Douglas Skipper. I'm not sure that I've ever actually used your full name, but it feels so fitting right now. I've had the pleasure of knowing you, met at a music festival maybe a year and a bit ago, and your level of self-awareness, your level of connection to spirit, your level of living a life that really seems to be your own, not just in a practical kind of sense, that external kind of world, but certainly your internal world. You're probably one of the most closest to enlightenment people I've maybe ever met in my entire life. And it's such a pleasure to have you on the show here today. Talk to me about what a life by design or a conscious life means to you.
The first response for me is that it's done with awareness. So I do get the sense that anything that's done by design or intentional, there needs to be some type of awareness preceding that intentionality or that design. And that it's probably also related to alignment with one's authentic truth, internal truth. And so being able to connect with that internally and then just having the external representation of that as a natural byproduct is probably how I would respond to that initially.
And the cultivation of that self-awareness, the cultivation well of awareness in itself, how have you done that? Or how do you do that?
Well, for me, life, just living life, is the ultimate classroom. So each interaction, there will be something that I'll either become maybe more cognizant of, more aware of, or my blindsidedness will close down that awareness, which means that I'm not cultivating in maybe the most efficient way or the most compassionate way. So I think there's just the natural ebb and flow of life and those interactions. But then I think over and above that, there is an intentionality for cultivating that awareness at in an enhanced manner. And that's probably where I've just looked at, the sociology, the anthropology, the study of human life and history. And for people who do have that self-awareness, quite often there's practices and techniques that go along with that. So I look at the wisdom traditions, I look at contemporary psychology and what that has to say about cultivating awareness and intentionality. And ultimately, my mind, my emotions, my life becomes the laboratory to test stuff out and go, well, does this work well? Yes, no, maybe. Does this work in this particular context? Yes, no, maybe. How can I refine this so I can cultivate that awareness more and more, and an ongoing journey, an
You're
ongoing
the
journey.
ever the guinea pig.
Ever the guinea pig, Luna. It's
I love what you said that about you. Yeah, like that life being the laboratory of like just the test and measure. I feel like that takes a significant amount of humility to be in a space where you where there is no failure, only feedback. It's a coaching principle or an NLP principle or whatever, wherever it comes from. To be in that space, what does it take to be humble enough to kind of realize that you don't know it all? Especially considering how much you've done in your life.
Well, recognizing that life or the universe or there's something else operating at a much vaster level, and that awareness is is so much greater than this limited egoic structure. And so life, conflict, tension, feeling like I'm going in, feeling like I know I'm right and I'm convinced I'm right, but then life will just push back even greater and going, well, actually, this might not be the case. So I can choose to reflect and let go of my preconceived ideas or my egoic desires in that moment. Whether it's called humility or rationality at some level as well. And this is where I think a lot of the meditation practices that I've done over the years, you know, they talk about vipassana or insight into actually seeing reality as it is, not how I want it to be, but how it is in the moment. And so I think that also feeds into that idea of recognizing when it's more a projected reality or my thoughts or my emotions or my belief systems are telling me something, but it goes contrary to the reality that is right there in that moment.
Yeah, I almost, the way that you've just described that to me, it's like, well, humility, interestingly enough, in that context, almost presupposes ego. Because to like, I have to humble my ego, like the ego is the one that's humbled. But when you're just experiencing reality as it is, then there is no need. It sounds funny, but it's almost an advanced form of it because there's no need for humility when it's just rooted in logic, in reality, in like, well, it just is this way. I don't need to be humble about it. It just is.
Yeah, for sure. And for me, those moments can be closer or more further away, depending on how strong my sense of overlaying reality is versus going, oh, well, this is the objective reality as it is. So even the sense of, you know, humility or an interpretation of that reality is much more reduced, and it is just a recognition of that awareness or that reality in the moment.
Yeah.
So,
Doug, I'm so fascinated about your path because you have done things that perhaps people, you know, what I might even call like a layperson has never really done, right? Like in terms of like getting an accounting cadetship at 17 with one of the largest accounting firms in the world, but then also, which seems completely contrary, spending a year as a novice meditation monk when you were 25, spending 3 years undertaking disaster relief and development work in Indonesia after the 2004 tsunami, and also living in an intentional community for 5 years completely off grid. What started you on this path?
I would probably say dissatisfaction.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. That living life, the material form of life at a certain point became very dissatisfying. And so, you know, in at least the Buddhist tradition, that first noble truth talks about, you know, life is about dissatisfaction or suffering or distress.
Suffering.
And recognizing that that was my experience, and so looking for some sort of antidote to that or some way out of that. And so I think the different strategies that were sort of brought about and I tested out in different stages, some of them were more like escapist strategies, I would say, you know, just trying to bypass reality or my emotional reality. But then at a certain point when it felt like a few dots started to connect and I'm like, oh, so this seems to be a bit more of my authentic reality, and there's enough wisdom traditions that talk about this as well, so it's not just me relying on my own sense, it's relying on the wisdom of society, of people who have walked that path before, to go, well, you know, this is the way towards happiness or peace. And it relates to, well, for me it had to come first within myself to try to find some degree of peacefulness, acceptance, awareness within myself, and then contemplate how can I be a more useful vessel in the world out there. And so that's where I think the, you know, going into an accounting cadetship and entering the corporate world at a very early age for me, and being very dissatisfied with the material version of success and happiness and going, that just doesn't resonate. And then looking at something a bit more fulfilling, asking those big questions. Who am I really? Like, who is this I? Who is this thing or this construct that is has been called Doug? You know, what is the thought process? What is the emotional system that is intertwined in this construct of Doug? And then while I am here living this, you know, what I would say miraculous life, like the fact that I exist and we're talking over this technological stream, for me is like mind blowing when I really stop and think about it. So then that led more towards, well, how can I intentionally use these resources that are quite often hidden in plain sight, like to have a mind, to have vocal cords that can articulate sounds, which we call words, which become sentences, which become conversations, which potentially help others or raise consciousness. What is consciousness? Yep. Like that whole exploration is where it sort of led to different stages of, I'm not just in this by myself. We're all in this together. So what can I do to be of service to others as well as myself?
Yeah.
Because if I'm not if I'm not honoring myself as well, then at a certain point that desire to be of service for others can get out of alignment, I find. And working with other people, it can be more of a martyr or a self-sacrificing thing as opposed to an authentic values aligned expression of my truth, spirit, awareness, whatever we want to call it, that is just resonating out there. So that's where I think
it becomes that people pleaser, trying to prove myself. I'm trying to make sure other people like me. I am really curious because you have a special interest in positive psychology and optimal health and well-being. You're an accredited mental health social worker. You work with people clinically to help them, you know, through many different things like you use CBT, ACT, EMDR, all words that people may or may not know of. We don't need to go into too much detail of that. How important do you think it is? Well, so you've got that psychologically counseling, that framework, and you're deeply spiritual. Is that the word that you would use? Spiritual? Is that a fair summation?
Yeah, I guess that's one of
connected.
The words.
one of the words. How important do you think is the pathway of, like you just said, about who am I, my getting to know your character? When I mean by character, like that ego, that the person that has been created, the Doug that you are, the Luna that I am, the like that first layer of mind of the ego. How important it is, do you think, that we need to really understand the processes about who we are until we maybe get to a point where we start to let that go? Because I take it as part of the spiritual path or as part of the awakening consciousness path, we eventually let go of the ego. So, or not let go of, but, you know, we move away from but how important it is to figure the first part out, do you think?
I would say it's pretty important because, and the literature sort of supports this as well, especially in the psychology area, that the reasons that people might seek strategies or techniques to enhance their lives or find more peace or whatever it might be, quite often it's because the unit structure, the egoic structure, is not happy with where it is at that moment in time. And so, you know, one of my first community development teachers years ago said that, you know, you can't expect to go out into the community and like get the community to like align with your vision. You need to go out and meet the community with where it is. Like, what are the needs in the community? Now, I just get the sense that I'm a community of different selves or different parts. I've got my emotional community. I've got my cognitive community, my intellectual community, my existential spiritual community of self. And so I need to go in and meet myself with wherever I am in that moment.
Oh.
And quite often for some people, if it might be like, you know, really clinical, intense difficulties that they're experiencing, then that is the reality in that moment. So it's working with that. And quite often that is within the framework of the self, or the, you know, the constructed self. And then through that process, then with intentionality and with a bit more awareness of how the nuts and bolts are forming or not forming so well, then we start to get a bit more sense of how it is that we can refine our own community of selves to be able to be maybe more harmonious, more peaceful, more self-regulated, whatever that direction is. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Rather important. So, you know, meet yourself where you are before being able to make any kind of change there. I see a lot in maybe in what I would call spiritual communities, and I call it spiritual bypassing. And you kind of alluded to it before that maybe there's that escapism. It's like, oh no, I'm just love and light. And they will say something maybe passive aggressive to somebody, you know, they're definitely not sovereign. They're definitely not taking personal responsibility, but they'll end the email with love and light. And that's meant to mean that, you know, that no bad can come. What do you see? Well, in your own experience, and what do you see in the world of that kind of bypassing of, I don't need to do the emotional deprogramming work. I don't need to do the self work because I'm just going to go straight to consciousness.
Well, if it works for people, power to them.
Yeah. Does it? Do you think it does?
If it feels like it's, you know, sustainable and it's integrated and it can enable mm-hmm. one's actions to reflect that awareness of love and light, mm-hmm. especially mm-hmm. when there's challenging situations or conditions that are present, then mm-hmm. I do sincerely believe, feel, and at some level know that that love and light, that awareness is who we are.
Yeah.
And same. that how we relate to that is a very beautiful and sacred process, and how we express that in the world can be at times very aligned and very congruent. And at other times it can be more through a spiritual bypass, like, oh, this part of me doesn't really like this situation, so I'll bypass it, but I'll still come back to the love and light at the end of the email. Mm-hmm. So yeah. This is where I see that there's so much complexity within each person and each organism that a big part of it is trying to get the organism to work in some sort of symphony and synchrony. And
harmony.
Sometimes we get that right, some of the time, a lot of the time, or not much of the time. So I think that there is a risk that once we get a direction for where we want to end up or the goal, and this is where I guess a lot of the traditions talk about, you know, love, light, you know, gods to enter the kingdom of heaven, or Nirvana,
enlightenment,
Nirvana, yep. You know, mm-hmm. the list goes on, that there is dual or multiple dimensions occurring at all moments. There is the relative conventional, I'm in the world, we're having this discussion through this technology and there's a laptop in front of me. And so at yep. a conventional level, those atomic particles have constructed themselves to be able to facilitate that process. Mm-hmm. Yet we also know that energetically, they're just oscillations of energy, and that at an absolute level, there's a whole other thing that's going on that we may or may not be cognizant of in each moment. And that's occurring within our mm-hmm. emotional system as well. So that's not to say that I'm always going to be expressing love and light. In certain moments, my most authentic truth is expressing rage or anger
yes.
or frustration.
Yes.
So can I be aware of that emotional frequency while at the same time be somewhat cognizant of the love and light dimension? Yes, no, maybe. And that's yes. where I think it comes back to the laboratory yep. of the self and just the ongoing practice, because as much as, you know, sudden awakenings happen, and I'm aware of people who have had these massive enlightenment experiences or whatever.
Yep.
It also comes back to the book that Jack Kornfeld wrote, I think, called After the Ecstasy, the Laundry. What do we do when we have these
Ah, yes.
epiphanies, but then we have to go
Yes.
back and we have to cook the meal, we have to do the laundry.
Yeah.
You know, how do we work with our
Yep.
enlightenment or awareness experiences in that objective reality? So that's where I think
And
sometimes,
that
yeah.
Yeah, that last little quote that you just made, Jack Canfield, is that who it was?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, it reminds me of I don't even know where I've collected it from. I just tend to collect things, and it's before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. And I think that just speaking to that, there's such wisdom of sitting there going, while we're here in our human selves, we're the human selves. We still need to do the laundry. The car, like problems are still going to arise. And it's not in the, I think that a lot of people, maybe a myth that I see in the world is a lot of people think that on any of this path, personal development, spiritual development, enlightenment, whatever, that you're going to get to a point where there are no problems. And I think that screws a lot of people along the way because it's like, oh, so, but I'm having an emotional reaction. I feel sad about this, or I don't like these current circumstances. It means that I'm not spiritual, or it means that I haven't done enough work. What would you tell people, maybe clients or even friends, people that come to you that sit there and go, I've done so much work on myself, and yet I'm still being triggered by my mother, or the COVID still pissed me off. Like, what do you say to people in that situation?
Well, the fact that people are aware that they're still getting triggered by their in-laws is a
Yep.
great step. Once again, it's building the
Love it.
awareness. It's like, oh yeah, so
Yeah.
this is it. And then going back and testing it out again and practicing it more and more. And maybe in that moment, the reactivity, the emotional reactivity, if there is an intentionality and if we feel like that is an authentic direction that we want to head in, because some people might want to stay with the reactivity. You know, creative artists or whoever will really want to use the full emotional dynamic range of their experience to channel that. So
Wow.
once again, it comes back to what is the goal? What is the direction? Do I want to, you know, self-regulate in this way so I'm not triggered by my in-laws? Or do I actually want to just recognize that that's there and possibly just hold it within a bit more compassion for myself in that moment, or trying to bring in a bit of equanimity to go, okay, this is a reaction. It will come, it will go. Everything passes. And then the other thing I would probably just respond to what you mentioned before is I've also heard that idea about before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water for others. So that is
Ah,
where I
yes.
probably see as the journey goes on, and that's probably what motivated, you know, going into the service mode a bit more, like doing, you know, development and relief work. And quite often it was my own self-interest that was motivating that, but there was also some sort of awareness of, well, it seems like my happiness is quite entwined with other people's happiness. And
Yep.
a lot of traditions talk about if you really want to be happy, well, do things for others because it
Yes.
transcends
And
the egoic stuff.
yeah, and tell me how we discern with that, because a lot of certainly my clients and people listening to my podcast come from a root of low self-esteem. Oh, you know, I've experienced a lot of that. Are people pleasers, are martyrs? You talked about that just before. How do we discern between service to others and martyrdom? Because people go, I but I, every, everyone gets put first in my world. How do we discern between those two things?
Oh, well, that's probably a huge discussion in itself, and it can take
Yeah, cool.
a long time. But in a snapshot, what comes to mind is I think being clear about one's value system, you know, like what are the ethics, what are the principles, what are those values that I actually do resonate with, And if it is, for example, service, then is it service to others? Is it service to myself? Is it service to something else? And so once again, being clear about what is the operating system that we have. And quite often that operating system is a conditioned operating system that we didn't have much choice over at all. And in many situations, no choice. It was just conditioned upon us. And then trying to work with awareness, compassion, patience, whatever it is, to go, okay, well, what is this operating system? And is one of those programs that I need to be of service to the detriment of myself? That turns towards the martyrdom type thing. So I'm carrying so much the burden of others that I might crash and burn. And I saw that in Arche, in the tsunami, where a lot of seasoned development professionals unfortunately had nervous breakdowns because the degree of suffering and distress was so much. And there was a, I want to help it all. I want to help them all, but it's just
save the world.
Me.
Yeah.
And so I think looking at the operating system again and going, okay, how can I maybe work with this in a way? What feels like a more compassionate or a more gentle approach to myself and to others? So I can be of service, but I can be of service in a way that's more sustainable. So it might just mean not saving the whole world, but maybe I feed the cat, or maybe I smile to someone when I'm shopping, or maybe I make eye contact with, you know, someone that I wouldn't normally do. So I think there's different levels of being able to serve, and it does come back to what are the values that are underpinning the operating system. So when we are in those moments and we can feel like we've done an action, performed an action, and it does feel aligned and it does feel congruent, then there can be this positive reinforcement or compassionate reinforcement to go, you showed up a bit differently in that moment. You didn't just have a big response to your in-laws or whatever it might be.
Yes. Yeah. Do you think, can we change that operating system? Like, are there things that are just going to be permanent? Can we actually change that OS that has been installed?
Well, I would say yes, because of all the neuroplasticity and a lot of the traditions, the wisdom traditions and contemporary traditions talk about that, you know, enlightenment, nirvana, entering the kingdom of heaven, however we want to frame that, or being one with the universe, is possible. So there is a movement towards it. There is a process. And we also have what we would call personality traits from like a psychological perspective, which mean that they're quite often the more enduring long-term traits, and they can be much harder to change. So for example, if I'm, you know, a more introverted person, then it might be much more difficult for me to become like the life of the party extrovert. And so these personality traits that are more enduring, they may change to different degrees. So I'd say that certain things within the operating system can change sometimes quite quickly, and quite often tragedy, trauma, something like that will really change the operating system really quickly in terms of our perspective, our view on things, and other things we actually keep because they're protective factors for us as well. So once again, for me, it's about how can I be the conductor of the operating system in a way so all these different parts within myself can start to work in a bit more of a symphony, as opposed to the more disruptive sort of elements of the process.
Yeah, all parts of the band are playing on a different rhythm. They're playing a different tune. They're playing with different timing. It doesn't tend to make for a harmonious kind of sound. It sounds like a hell of a lot of noise racket that you want to just shut up, right? Whereas if you're the conductor and you can bring them all together, all the different parts of us, then we have harmony rather than dissonance. Do you think, Doug, that you had mentioned about, well, there's more enduring parts of our personality, right? There is kind of like almost like an innate kind of way that we might be, or gifts that we might have. Like ever since I was a kid, Whether or not it's conditioned, I'm not sure, but I have had the ability to articulate quite well, right? That's been something that through language, through words, I can write really well, really easily. Where to have, and none of my family else can. I was never taught to write, but I can. It seems like it's an innate ability, maybe from lifetimes past. I'm not entirely sure. Do you think that we need to, in order to say reach enlightenment, nirvana, get closest to consciousness, whatever it is, do we need to rid ourselves of the whole operating system, or do you think that some of it is useful and some of it may not be?
Yeah, well, those gifts, those strengths, quite often they're, incredible resources that we can totally harness and mobilize to be of service to others. So, for example, the fact that we're having this podcast, this is a result of your efforts and your wisdom in a range of different areas and ability to articulate and facilitate and curate conversations. So that for me, it's not like it all has to go. And that for me is a bit of a myth around that idea of awareness, because in the tantric meditation path, it's very much about trying to realize that consciousness within the framework of the here and the now and, the material level of consciousness. So it's not like it's out there, it's not ahead, it is already here. It's just how do we work with those things? So these personality traits and resources that we have within us, for me, they are very much available to be harnessed and worked with and cultivated in a way that supports our unfolding, our inner unfolding, and supports the evolutionary unfolding.
Yeah, the word that really struck out for me just there that I just wrote down was resources. It becomes then a resource. So, kind of, I spoke about this just on a podcast recently that I used to hate myself, and I've had eating disorders and all sorts of really negative self-esteem within myself, or really low self-esteem. It's curious because I actually cultivated, like, I was very disciplined back in the day with, like, got to be on a diet, got to make sure that I get to the gym, da-da-da-da-da, like really kind of rigid and disciplined. It's a really interesting thing because that discipline that what I would say is I cultivated or learnt through those really hard times in my life is actually really useful for me in my current life. It's if I might say that. I say past life, it's still as Luna Gaia. Actually, it wasn't, it was a different name, but still, this lifetime, if I would be specific, I've used that. I read in your in your questionnaire coming here that discipline, it surprised me. You said that discipline is probably one of the biggest challenges that you have to stay like practicing on the path, whereas I find you to be an incredibly disciplined person. Tell me about your discipline. Tell me about why that was the one that stood out for you.
Well, there's a big part of me that loves pleasure. It loves the good stuff. And
Yeah, we
so
do. Yeah, we do.
if I give it a lot of airtime, then that pleasure-seeking principle within me will just go to town. And so,
Yes. Oh.
some people have more of a pain avoidance type deeper operating system. So it's like, what can I do to avoid pain? I was very much drawn towards the pleasure. And so I think over time I've realized that it's not good or bad, and that there is pain and there is pleasure, or there is, attachment and there is aversion. So how can I direct the ship or tweak the operating system to be going in the direction that feels aligned with my values, with what I feel is important? So for me, discipline could be substituted for practice. But then what I would say is really key within that is not just blind discipline. For example, I will just go to the gym, or I won't eat chocolate at all,
Irrelevant.
full stop, boom. It's
Correct. Yep.
how do I use discernment or wisdom to actually go, no, in this situation, I'm catching up with friends, and so we're going to have some food, and that will all be part of the social experience. And so I'm going to give myself a little bit more flexibility in this situation. I know tomorrow I can come back and start to work on the practice or the discipline in some other way. So for me, the discipline is probably synonymous with practice.
Yeah.
And because I know that I need, this construct is a constant work in progress, that I need to keep showing up for this construct. And if I don't, and I've done that in the past, then I can see how things can go, you know, in different ways, and it can go a bit pear-shaped at times. So the discipline and the practice
so
is about...
important.
About being able to have the insight or the awareness to be able to go, how do I want my discipline to go? Is it just going to be a blind dogmatic discipline, which means I'm bypassing some other part of myself? Or is it actually a discipline that feels compassionate, loving, kind, gentle, and adaptive and responsive to the moment or the context that I am in?
Otherwise, it's rigidity, right? It then becomes, you know, what doesn't bend breaks. So it becomes this rigidness of, and like it was in the past for me, that's why I would do binge purging, because it was like I was so rigid that then I would have to explode. It was diet culture for me for many, many years. I would be so rigid. I can't. I'm not going to go out. I have to go to the gym even when I'm exhausted. I led myself to adrenal fatigue because there was no off switch. I didn't trust myself enough to say my body needs rest today, tomorrow, this week. It's okay, because I'm going to pick it back up when it's the most aligned choice there.
You know? For sure.
And practice makes progress. I say this, I'll often say to people, like, you know, obviously wrote a book called Perfectly Imperfect, and people go, you know, practice makes perfect. What do you make of that? If people are aiming towards perfection, what do you think that does to us?
Well, once again, I like to frame it at an absolute level and a relative level. So at a relative level, where, you know, it's this imperfect human construct of Doug or whoever who has his, you know, his vulnerabilities and his whatever, then if I'm trying to set the bar above what I even know is possible, then that can quite often set up some really unhelpful patterns and responses. You know, am I a failure? I've never achieved what I should be achieving, and all those stories that can go along with that. And so I think when people are, you know, working on themselves or playing around with their consciousness and their mind and their emotions and whatnot, then that, once again, we need to meet ourselves where we are. So is perfection, is that what we're actually looking for in this situation? Whereas for some people, what they're really needing is just to be able to stay engaged in an emotional process rather than being a perfectly emotionally intelligent person in that moment. At an absolute level, and this is where I love the traditions, the wisdom traditions, who actually articulate it and make it specific that, yes, nirvana, enlightenment is possible and it is attainable. So at some level, I don't know if we'd call it perfection, but the pinnacle of human possibility is available to us. And so I do, I don't know, I think perfection can have a fair bit of baggage, like social and historical baggage associated with it. So I don't know if I'd use the word perfection, but what is potentially available to oneself. I like that idea as an aspirational type motivation for me, because I'm like, well, here I am having a human life. I've got a mind which is doing things, and I've got a body, and I've got these other resources. So what would it be like if I really sought to see how far it could go? You know, how deep is consciousness? How deep is the ocean? And so I think, once again, if it's all of these things for me, there's a caveat, and it's that idea of wisdom. You know, if I'm not doing all of these practices with some degree of wisdom and discernment, and that's probably why we started when, you know, the first response at the start of this podcast was around awareness. If there is an awareness to be able to see what's going on, then I might just go for perfection as a blind thing as a substitute for my self-worth. But if I'm actually going, no, I feel like I'm at a point now where I'd like to up my skills in some area. I want to take it to the next level. It might not be this absolute level of perfection like that. It's just an expansion of one's being.
It's
realizing the next level of possibility of who we are and how we can show up in the world.
Because it's well, what's the next step? You know, I found often in my life, I've been like, I could feel the potential from a very young age of kind of like, oh, all this. And, you know, there was this, I wanted to be famous and I wanted to have this and have all the money and have all these things that I thought that I wanted to make myself feel like I was enough. And it's interesting because as I've just continued to grow, like there's been an impatience in me of like, but I want it now. I know who I am now. Come on, let's do it. Like, universe, give it to me. But very often it's just, I just take the next step. I just keep walking forward. What for you, what is your next step? What are you feeling into right now? Where are your edges being stretched?
The moment-to-moment practice for me comes down to the sort of the same thing that I've been practicing for decades, and that's being present as much as I can moment-to-moment. So when I break it down to something really operational, it's like, how present can I be in this moment?
Yeah.
In terms of...
Please.
So that for me is what it largely starts with and ends with. And that's where, you know, whether we talk about awareness or consciousness or enlightenment or whatever those words are, it can only ever be now. The idea of that future projection, I think it's helpful as a construct to harness and mobilize resources. But when I really break it down, the way I feel I can be of primary service is to be fully present. And within that presence is holding an attitude of love, compassion, light, equanimity, whatever version it is within that moment. But because it's like a human existence and it's, you know, it's working, it's interacting with others, then there's a few other areas that are emergent processes, I would say. And it's interesting because I've just been accepted to do a diploma in music, in like creation and composition, like literally this morning. So, you know,
congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a long-term thing. But now it feels like the conditions are supportive to pursue that. So that for me is going to grow the creative edges in many different ways. And so I do like to have these other goals at a more relative conventional level, which keep motivation or the practice or the discipline towards learning and upskilling in different areas.
Yeah. So then this path of music, there is a path that's I know personally that's been emerging for you, that continues to emerge for you. The question was going to be, how do you see it unfolding? Or like, how do you want it to be? I think that on a relative level, you can answer that, right?
Yeah.
In some way, shape or form.
Yeah, for sure, Luna. Like there've been lots of moments thinking and conceptualizing and envisioning. And that for me is one of the wonderful things of the human mind, that we can imagine, we can project into the future or into the past and go down all these different rabbit holes of our imagination or the creative process. And whereas maybe years ago when that desire was sort of formulating a bit more, the operating system I felt wasn't calibrated in the right way. It was still coming from some other motivation about, you know, people, you know, getting approval from others, or, you know, the fame or the name, or those types of things, and
becoming someone.
What so many of those types of thoughts or inclinations, whereas now it feels like, how can I be of service in different ways and utilize the resources that have been, you know, given to me, like your ability to articulate, Luna, like, you know, this is a resource. So how to make the most of what we've got. And I've written poetry for years and years, and that for me has been a way of dialoguing with consciousness, or, you know, and so, you know, I'm starting to share that more. And for me, music has always been an integral part of that creative expression. And working in the clinical field, there's so much research around creativity and mental health and how those they align and they integrate more and more. So the idea of just playing talk therapy now, a lot of people find that that's not nearly enough. There needs to be other ways to engage with the operating system. So for me, the creative process personally has been a huge tool for working through lots of difficult moments and chapters. And I can also see how other people benefit from it as well. So my logical, rational, and emotional brain goes, well, if you can combine the two, then yee-haw, get a bit more of a synergy going. So
that's because music has such a to kind of almost end where we started here, I met you at a music festival, and what I loved about, you know, through your sister, but you know, we met in music, and music has this such capacity to inform and unite and inspire and connect. You know, it's such a powerful medium. Whenever I look, I'm like, to be a, even like a pop star, right? If you're a pop star, the amount of influence that your words have on the kids, the people, the everyone who's listening to it and repeating it back, it becomes a mantra, like, we are the champions. That we're feeling that with inside of ourselves, like it's cultivating it, right? So I love that that's where you want to go. I feel inspired with music in the same kind of way, that people can connect with it in a way that, you know, it's a song, it's 3 minutes, it's 5 minutes, or it's a sound healing that goes for half an hour or something. There's such power in the music. Doug, you and I have amazing conversations. We always do. Today has been no exception to that rule by any stretch of the imagination. If you could sum up what it's like to use your free will to surrender to the universe, if I would, to live life by design insofar as much as you can, or today's conversation in just 5 words. It can be a sentence, it can be 5 individual words. What 5 words would you choose to leave us with today?
Cultivate awareness, be intentional, be kind.
Love it. Cultivate awareness, be intentional, and be kind. Thank you, Doug. Such a pleasure to have you here. We are looking forward to the emergence of music. At this point in time, it is in its infancy, so there's nowhere that I can send anybody to come check you out just yet. But is there any place that people, you know, is your social work open, available? Do you have space? Do you want me to send people anywhere to be able to work with you or see you in any way, shape or form, or is today just perfect?
Today is pretty complete, but thanks kindly for the offer. Much appreciated.
Such a pleasure. Thanks for being here, Doug. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Luna. Been a pleasure.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the More Confidence with Luna Gaia podcast. I hope you feel more confident, more self-assured, and ready to go tackle the world's problems and maybe kick ass in some of your dreams. If you haven't already, I would love for you to like and subscribe, follow, and maybe leave a review so that other people know how to find this awesome podcast too. If you're wanting to sink your teeth into something even more juicy, my number one best-selling book, Perfectly Imperfect, Your Complete Guide to Loving Yourself and Loving Your Body, is now available on all good bookstore sites, both in print, digital, and I narrated it for Audible as well. If you think that coaching or maybe one of my courses is for you, why not head to www.moreconfidence.com.au and get in touch and see if we can talk. And of course, you can find me all across the social medias. That's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, which is where you're probably listening now, or maybe even here on the podcast platform. Sending you big love and wishing you a beautiful day.